Okay. So I wanted to speak today about the topic of Kavod Malchut. Nowadays, in the modern world, we don't really think of kings and queens so much. Of course, it used to be a staple of the entire world until relatively recently in human history. But certainly in the time of Tanakh and in the world of Halacha, there's been a discussion about what the status is, and more importantly, what the relationship should be, what honor we should show kings and queens. And as we'll see very imminently, the discussion going back to Mefarshim on Tanakh, as well as the primary Gemara that discusses this topic, makes it eminently clear that whatever differences there may be, but there's a fundamental notion of kavod, of honor, that we are obligated to display even to non-Jewish kings. So what I'd like to discuss with you, A, is what's the source for this idea? B, and this is much more important in the modern era, what is the definition from a halachic context of a king? Is it the symbolism, the title, the trappings, the privilege, or is there certain requirements in terms of power or authority which have to be met? And obviously this is not only a theoretical question, it becomes most relevant in the modern era when we don't interact in any way in a world which is filled with monarchs. But we certainly have world leaders, we have dictators, we have people who are powerful. So how does this, whatever halachos that were true in yesteryear about a king or a queen, and we're going to assume that this applies equally to queens as well. So how does that apply to a prime minister? How does it apply to a democratically elected president? How does it apply to the one queen that we're all familiar with, relatively speaking, in the Western world, the Queen of England, who has certain clear characteristics of being a queen and a monarch? She inherited it. She will give it over by inheritance to her children, the wealth, the honor, and yet she's pretty much powerless. So that's like the inverse of a modern leader. And again, I think that these questions are somewhat more common than you might think. Over the years, I've spoken to various Jewish people in the UK, who for a variety of reasons have had opportunities to meet the Queen. Certainly there have been people over the years who had opportunities to meet President of the United States. I actually was fortunate in the Hanukkah of 2003. Me and my wife were invited to the White House. We met then President Bush and his wife. So this is a question, and I'm not so unique. There are plenty of Jews, including religious Jews, who have met presidents, current, past, and I'm sure will be true in the future. Question is what to do when you do meet that person. What are the halachos, or is there a halacha? And particularly, to hone in on, what we're really going to be speaking about is a bracha that is mentioned in the Gemara. So where does this come from in terms of even the parsha? Why am I speaking about it? So in this week's parsha, and of course the whole interaction of the next few weeks, we have Moshe and obviously Aaron's interaction with Paro. And in this week's parsha in particular, Shmos Perek Vav Pasuk Yigimel, the Torah tells us as follows: Yidaber Hashem al Moshe vel Aaron v'yitzaveim el bnei Yisrael v'el Paro melech Mitzrayim. Right, that they should command, they should tell over about the Jewish people, to the Jewish people, specifically to Paro, all about how Hashem wants to take them out of the land of Egypt, etc., etc. But this is kind of an awkward phrase: v'yitzaveim el Paro melech Mitzrayim. So Rashi quotes that, in fact, there are two levels of interpretation. There's the pshat, which just means he was instructing Moshe what to tell the king. That's a simple pshat. But, says Rashi, the drash is, tziva alav lachlok lo kavod b'divrayim. Then Moshe and Aaron were given a mitzvah, an obligation, to display honor when addressing Paro. Now you may suggest, and it's not a bad suggestion in and of itself, that maybe this is just good diplomacy, smart shtadlonos, a phrase that some people may be familiar with. It's a good way to deal with people in power. You butter them up a little bit. If you come in all disrespectful, less likely to be successful. I guess it's possible. But you don't get the sense from Rashi that we're speaking about a strategy. I don't, at least.
Moreover, in the next week's parsha in Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Ches, take a look at Rashi there. It's the second place in Moshe's interaction with Paro, where again, Pasuk somewhat vague. Rashi again says, Moshe gave kavod to the Melech. Moshe gave kavod to Paro. So even a wicked persecutor, enemy of the Jewish people, we see according to the Chazal, there's a mitzvah to show them some level of respect. And if you want a good midrashic sikum, a summary of all the places in Tanakh where we see this displayed, there's an amazing Yalkut Shimoni in Simon Kuf Ayin Chet 178, the Yalkut Shimoni there, where he lists many, the Medrash lists many of the tzaddikim, so to speak, of Tanakh, who were chalak kavod lamach, words of the Medrash, who gave over, displayed, demonstrated honor of the king, Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe, Eliyahu, Daniel, various episodes, various heroes of Tanakh. So it's a pretty, the generic, general idea of honoring the king is pretty well-founded, certainly in Tanakh. In what ways is this concretely, if you will, even ritually manifest? So this is what I was alluding to before. This is the basis of a well-known Gemara, Masechta Brachos, on Daf Nunchet Amud Aleph. There the Gemara says as follows. Listen carefully, because the Gemara is going to distinguish, at least in a very, very subtle way, what you should do when you see a Jewish king versus what you do when you see a non-Jewish king. Nunchet, 58. It's easier for you. Oem Malchei Yisrael, says the Gemara. If you see a Jewish king, Omer, you should say, Baruch Shechalak Mikvodo Lireyav. Now, it'll be clear later in the Shir, you'll see why. For now, just take my word for it. Even though the Gemara did it shorthand, what the Gemara had in mind is, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam. Right, stakes are pretty low when you don't use Hashem's name. But here the Gemara, as you'll see very clearly in a few minutes, the Gemara has in mind what's called Shemu Malchut, the formal structure of a bracha with Hashem's name, the whole deal. So what's the bracha you say when you see a Jewish king? You thank Hashem or you praise Hashem, who, God who? Chalak mikvodo l'rayav. He, so to speak, imparted or he shared his honor with those who fear him. What about if you see Malchei Umot HaOlam, says the Gemara in the next phrase? What if you see a non-Jewish king? So the Gemara says, you also make a bracha. What bracha is that? Amar Baruch Shanatan Mikvodo Labasar Vadam. Two distinctions in the text of the brachos. What are the two distinctions? Not specific. The second one about non-Jews is Basar Vadam, human beings. What was the one when it came to Jewish kings? Lireyav. Right? To those who fear him. So that distinction is certainly, again, without getting too much into the details of why the term Lireyav is used, there's many other euphemisms and terms that are used to describe the Jewish people, but clearly that discrepancy highlights, you know, the general meta-theme of the Jews being the Banim Lamakom, having a special relationship with Hashem, the Seder. But what's the other difference? It's an immediate parallel. So you, again, I'll read the brachot again. One is Baruch Shechalak Mikvodo L'Rayav, and then the second one to the non-Jews, Baruch Shenatan Mikvodo L'Basar V'Adam. Yeah. Right. So what is the difference between Chalak? Again, now if I were to say to you, what's the gist of the two brachos? The gist of the two brachos is the same. In both cases, it's talking about God giving over, you know, the fact that there are other people who are honored, especially with that term Melech, which is, you know, God is the Melech HaOlam. So there's, again, it's very, very, very watered down. But still, compared to God, it's still something, at least in this world, that he's the Melech with the capital Mem. And God has allowed for such a world in which there are, you know, Melech or Malka with the lowercase Mem. So that's somehow the gist of it. But yet, the Gemara terms has a Nusach, which is a slightly different term. Yeah.
Maybe when it's someone in Najush King says Nusach, basically saying that this honor is really no different.
Okay.
But by chalak, it means that this is a special, you know, certification that you now have.
So that's basically, excellent, well, that's basically the gist. If you take a look in the Beit Yosef, in Rabbi Yosef Karo, in his commentary on the tour there, it's in Or HaChaim, Siman Reish Chaf Dalet. He quotes a number of different explanations. Also look at the Magen Avraham and the Taz there. on that siman in Shulchan Aruch, where they have different theories as to what would be the difference between Chalak and Natan. But basically, the gist of it is, just like Lirayava versus Basar Vadam, that this is somehow supposed to also highlight the special relationship that Hashem has with the Jewish people. That I like the best, again, once you accept that premise that there really is a significant difference in the phraseology. So I like the explanation that Chalak, tell me if you what you guys think, I don't know if anyone here is an expert in Hebrew language, I'm not, but one of the theories, which I think to me rings true in terms of the Nusach, is that Natan is giving over. So, right? If I gave you this pen, I was no ten, I gave it to you. But when I'm Chalak something to you, I give over a part of myself. I give you a Chalak, something more, it's like hewn, somehow cleaved from me. It implies something more personal. Like, similar to you said, Hashem gives people lots of things. He gives them wealth, he gives them honor, he gives them measles. I mean, that's not all good, but he gives us lots of things. Chalak implies that somehow the kavod that a Jewish king has is in a very personal way, intimate way, connected to Hashem's own kavod. Exactly what that means, philosophically, theologically, that's beyond the scope of our shir. But again, it highlights this discrepancy, this distinction of something more personal, more intimate in the relationship in general between Hashem and the Jewish people, writ large, and more specifically honing in on this halacha between the Jewish king as opposed to the non-Jewish king. The Gemara then continues. Let's get back to the Gemara. Let's read two more phrases. The Gemara says something very important. Interesting. Li'olam yishtadel adam larutz likrat malchei Yisrael. It's not just that you happen to see the king make the bracha, says the Gemara. Again, something a little bit removed from our modern experience. We should always try, make an extra effort to go run to see the king. You know, if you hear the king is in town, but you know you're going to have to wait 5 hours on the rope line. Again, you could always, it's always a shikul, you know, what am I giving up, what am I gaining? But you might just dismiss us. You know, I could easily imagine people saying, ah, come on, it's narishkeit, it's silliness, what are you running to go see the king, the queen for? The Gemara says, li'olam yishtadel, you should try. And the Gemara says, I know what you're thinking. It says it was reading our mind. That must be for the Jewish king, for the tzaddik. It says, no. You know, that would pretty make it pretty irrelevant now. But no, says the Gemara, even a non-Jewish leader, a non-Jewish monarch, you should try to run to see them as well. Why, says the Gemara? She'im yizke yavchin bein malche Yisrael l'malche umos olam. Because if you're zoche, says the Gemara, you will merit to be able to discern the difference between the Jewish king and the non-king. What's that talking about? So Rashi explains, the allusion here is to the Melech HaMashiach. What's the yizke? I'll merit to be there when a Jewish king walks by. So now the Zuchut, says Rashi, is what the Gemara is saying is, if you live a good, the virtuous life, and you'll be Zocha to meet Mashiach, so you think, if you have nothing to compare it to, you'll appreciate the honor, the pageantry of the Melech HaMashiach, like anything in life. But that's in a vacuum. But if you have a context, if in your mind's eye you can recall the pageantry, the honor that was given to a non-Jewish monarch, that already set a bar, that set a context. Then, Rashi says, when you'll see what will be the honor for the Jewish king, for the Melech HaMashiach particularly, that will give you a greater appreciation for the kavod of Mashiach. Right? Without the context, you know, anything is more than what we're used to. But when you have a context, you've already seen the kind of pomp and circumstance, the pageantry of the non-Jewish king, so then, I remember, again, I don't want to digress too much into the personal. Maybe at my Shabbos table we could talk about this or something. But I do remember specifically that time that I was at the White House a second time, but then I didn't meet anyone famous. I was just getting a tour. It was a VIP tour, not because I'm important, but because I'm friends with someone who was. So I got in on a tour, but I didn't meet anyone famous. I just got to see things after hours. But that one time where I was invited and did meet the president, so one of the lasting memories I have parallel to this was just like the awesome pageantry of the White House. We were in the East Wing, was all dressed up for Hanukkah and the other holiday season. And it was just like, you had the sense. Exactly, yeah, of course. Calms, yeah. Okay, you got me. Christmas. It makes everyone feel better. So, the bottom line is, you got a sense. I remember thinking, like, again, on some level, like, you know, this is what it means to be, like, you know, in a Beis HaMikdash, or in the palace of a king. Like, without even thinking of this Gemara, just intuitively, I didn't. My mind didn't make that kind of an association. So that's really what the Gemara is getting at. And again, this is kind of the makor, the introduction to the halacha, which I want to speak about. I'll take your questions in 1 second. Which is, now that we have such a halacha, there's Gemara Moed Katan, by the way, which talks about how important it is to see the melech. Here, if I remember correctly, I think this might have been specifically talking about a Jewish king. Double check that if this becomes relevant to you. But the Gemara there even talks about a kohen going over areas that are tameh, at least rabbinically, mitzvah rabbanon, to see the king. That's how important it is to see a king. You can even, as a kohen, be tameh, at least on rabbinic tumah. So you see a number of places in Shas, the allusions and the collection of the examples from Tanakh, where we, not only if you're in front of the king, should you honor the king, that's the Moshe or other examples in Tanakh, but specifically in this case, a bracha that's being recited, which again, it's not just saying dress up for the king. Right, when the halacha says make a bracha, it's taking the cover to a whole other level. I think we get that. And secondly, the idea that it's not just if you happen to see the king, but olam yishtadel, we should try to see the king. So that's the background, the premise. The question, which I want to get to in a minute, is okay. So, well, do we have any vestige of that? Our presidents, our prime ministers, our queens. What's the story? What are that? Does that have a status or not? Yes, Mati. Questions. There is such a concept about Kavod HaBrios, but there is also an example about seeing a king. There is such an idea of Kavod HaBrios.
Is it the same Gemara, or did they get
them? Remember offhand. Gemara Moed Katan, I'm referring to. The Gemara Moed Katan. But again, the idea that you can violate Durabonans for Kavod HaBrios, that is a classical halacha, you're correct about that. But this is a parallel halacha. Yeah?
What if the king has historically been really bad for the Jews?
Good question. We may get to it at least indirectly when I discuss one of the cases, one of the modern cases. But again, let me put it this way. Based on the premise of why we're talking about this, because of the connection to this week's Parsha, answer your own question.
Yeah.
It's a little bit surprising. I resonate with your premise, unstated premise of your question, but it seems like the answer may be yes.
Would there be any, like,
yes, that's a good question. That's a good question. I assume, I don't know if anyone's on the horizon, you know. 10 years ago, people thought maybe Lieberman. But now, I don't know if there's anyone even high enough to daydream. Like I said, there's no one with a realistic chance. But, right, the angry Jew from Brooklyn, anyway. So, I think assuming that if it would ever happen, I don't think, if you held, we haven't gotten to yet, but if you held that there was a halacha of malchut for an American president, I don't think it would be less because he's a Jew. I don't think more, but I don't think it would be less. What I thought you were going to get to, which I think is striking, is that I don't recall anyone having any discussion about the Prime Minister of Israel, which I think just goes to show that there's no one who has any havamina that is such an honored position. Really, it's a striking, like, by absence. Again, I can't say I saw everything that's ever been written on it, but I have seen a lot. And I don't recall ever seeing, even we'll get to some modern day contemporary Israeli poskim. I don't remember, again, I could have missed it, it's definitely possible, but I don't remember anyone, you know, discussing. I had a chance to meet Ben Gurion. You know, they talk about the Queen of England, they talk about the President of America. Those are the classical examples. Or King of Jordan, as we'll get to, or other things like that. But I don't remember anyone talking about the Prime Minister of Israel. And that is in a certain way telling in its own right. Do you want to ask something, right? Okay, so let's move on. Excellent. So what is the geder of a king? That's what we're asking about. The Gemara talked about melech, Midrashim, Rashi, and our parsha about melech. So is that something that's literal? You know, in which case, then we only have pretty much the Queen of England to discuss as a powerless monarch count? Or is that a euphemism, right? This is, you know, we could ask, it's almost like a, it's a good chakira, right? When the Gemara says king, so do we mean somehow literally a king, and whatever that implies, what would be the alternative, right? If I was going to tell you in advance that there is an alternate possibility, what would you say the alternate possibility is? Not that it necessarily has to be a formal king, but... Right, someone with some, we have to decide what maybe, but some threshold of power, right, to be halachically meaningful, we'll have to be more specific than saying a lot, but some threshold of power which was equivalent to what was the signature of a melech of antiquity, right? If it's about the power, so then possibly we can transfer it to modern non-monarchical positions. If it has to do with being a monarch, because Hashem is the melech malchei hamlachim, so it's only for a melech basar vadam, so then it might be limited to an actual king and queen. But if it's something about the power, right, which again, you could also analogize to Hashem, right? His awesome might. What does it mean to say God is the melech? Right? It's a figure of speech. What it really is conveying, I think, is not God the merciful father, but God the powerful creator. So maybe, that's really what we're about to get to. Yes? Good. So we'll get to it. I'm not going to veer into, you know, poli-sci or a tikva seminar, but not that those are either of them are bad. I'm interested in both. But we will touch on it. We will discuss the nature of democracy. Yes, we will in this year. Okay. So way before there was democracy, there was a medieval period where there were still plenty of things going on, and the in the Sefer Orchos Chaim, he quotes the Sefer HaEshkol. We've quoted these sources before. These are somewhat later Ashkenazic Rishonim. It's important to know we're talking about the Ashkenazic world. And they suggest that even if a person is not a king in technical, formal sense, but as long as he has what he defines as absolute power in a given geographical locale, then you would make a bracha upon such a person. What's the type of power we're discussing? You know, power can mean lots of things. So the Sefer HaEshkol, the Orchos Chaim, say something very specific, which I think makes a lot of sense if you were looking, if you had to pin it on one thing, the power of life and death. The power to single-handedly kill somebody. You could, if you are that person in that area, in that region, that state, who can order someone's death, so they suggest that is the definition of power, ostensibly virtually a melech, which would warrant a bracha. I'll just read you the one money quote. Shekol mishu choshev b'shultanot u'b'nesiyot kimelech, someone who has the power like a king, v'chein horeg b'mishpat, the ein mishi yimcha b'yado. No, people can complain. You know, people bellyache about everything, but they can't do anything about it. It doesn't matter. People like it. They don't like it. It's fair. It's not fair. It's just. It's unjust. There's no appeals process. This, again, maybe the title is duke. Maybe the title is prince. Maybe the title is just prime minister. It doesn't matter. It's the power. If that person has the power in a given locale to sign someone's death warrant to decide, and no one can do anything about that, the eino mashana diburo, no one can change. He can change his mind, but no one can overrule him. No one can force him to change his mind. In that case, says the Orchos Chaim on Sakazak, as a definition, someone like that, that has absolute power over a person's life, we would make a bracha. The Radbaz, living a little bit later than that, Radbaz we know was big chief rabbi in Egypt. So the Radbaz has a similar definition. And he was asked the following. Someone asked the Radbaz the following shuva. Radbaz, again, among the Rishonim, Radbaz is like a late, late Rishon, one of the most prolific in terms of writing shuvas. He has, I don't remember the number, I never counted, but well over 1,000, probably thousands of shuvas to the Radbaz. He was prolific. So somebody asked him the following question, that where they were in Egypt, it was a local shiloh, right? This is what the pulpit rabbi got, that there was somebody who... the king, there was apparently, you know, this, you could probably look this up, I did not do the history work on this, but apparently when the Radbaz lived in Egypt, Egypt was part of some larger empire. So there was a king over Egypt, but he wasn't the Egyptian king, he was some other king. The Jews in Egypt didn't see that person. But all these big empires, they had somebody who was ruling that particular state. Someone was, some tsar, some ruler was ruling Egypt. So they asked the Radbaz, when we see this guy, do we make the bracha or not? So in that case, the Radbaz actually says, we don't. Why not? He uses the same definition. Because apparently, whatever power that tsar had in the time of the Radbaz in Cairo, but the king could still overrule him. It wasn't the final word. For all this power, and I'm sure he used it, I'm sure he abused it, but he could have been overruled. He did not have absolute power. And what did the, right, as we saw a moment ago, the Or Chor Chaim had said that there's no one who could be Mocha, there's no one who could be Mishana, there's no one who could change his mind, there's no one who can overrule him. Well, in this case, says Radbaz, there is. The king can overrule him, the king can fire him, the king could kill him. So in that case, he's powerful, you can treat him with respect. For your own good, you probably should. But you wouldn't make a bracha, yes.
Does that mean that there's a court in place, like the Sanhedrin?
Oh, good.
So does that count as the ability to overrule? Is that?
In theory, yes. In theory, yes. We'll get to the issue of checks and balances. Rav Avadi Yosef discusses the issue of checks and balances when he discusses an American president. Okay, we'll get to that in a second. Yeah.
So apparently this far, the only ruler you really have to make a bracha on is like a dictator in like a totalitarian, right?
Because
like,
I mean, again, if you want to translate that into modern terminology and what the states are, yes, there's very few, certainly in the Western world now, who have that level of power. That's correct. Well, again, we didn't get to that yet. We're still in the Middle Ages. Yeah.
Did you mean to say that pardoning someone also?
Your mechaven is the same as Jacob. That's where Vavaji discusses that. Okay, we're going to get to that. Excellent. Very good. Now, the Chassam Sofer, who lived now, you know, not in our day, but in the modern era, right, the Chassam Sofer from Germany, living in Hungary, so he was familiar with two different areas of Europe. Chassam Sofer, much more recently, was also asked. Now, if you recall, and this you probably do know, right, the idea of a unified Germany. A very modern phenomenon, right? Germany, like many other countries in Europe, used to be made up of all sorts of, I don't know what the right exact term was, a city-state or, whatever the term is, you know what I mean, right? And they each had their local leaders. So they asked, again, the Chassam Sofer, would you make a bracha about such a person? And the Chassam Sofer there says that even if you're in a limited area, but if in that area you're all-powerful, then you would make the bracha. He refers to Medinas Reich. He's talking about, right, the Germany of old, Medinas Reich. And he says specifically, Mevarchen al kol, here I'll write this for you, you can see it, al kol. How do you say that word? If I put in the vowels, I'll make it easier for you. Now, Duke Sehem. Oh, sorry, yes, that's my haze. So, what is that in English, what we call that?
Dukes.
Right, not the Dukes of Hazzard, but the Dukes of Germany. A duke, right? Apparently, that was the term that was used. So, it's not a king, it's only a duke. But says the Chassam Sofer, even their dukes, Mipnei Shehamedina, he shalahem. But in their little, you know, in their backyard, they might as well be called king. They are in charge. Ein aleihem shum emas melech. Again, hearkening back to the Radbaz. Right? In the Radbaz, the guy in Cairo had a lot of power too. But he had to be scared of one guy, the king, who could come and do to him what he was doing to other people. The dukes of the Reich, at the time of the Chassam Sofer, had no one to fear. There was no one above them. They were in charge. Then he adds, interesting rhetorical cherry on top. He says another reason why he thinks you would make the bracha in Germany in his day, because even their children are called Prinzen. Since the duke's children are called princes, and that's a term we associate with the monarchy, so that's like a bonus, a cherry on top, why he thinks for sure you would make the bracha. How do we paskin? Again, you don't think of this, it's like a halacha lemaisa question, but this is brought down in Mishnah Brura. And the Mishnah Berurah, again, in 224, Siman Reish Chaf Dalet, the Mishnah Berurah is in Sif Katan Yud Beis. The Mishnah Berurah paskins based on this definition. In a moment, you'll see now we're ready to apply this to some modern questions. But the Mishnah Berurah says, Hashil Tonim She'ein Ol Melech Aleihem, even though they're not a king, but there's no one higher than them. There's no one who can change their words. The Shano Divrehem, and they have the power, V'dan V'horeg B'mishpat, they can kill people if they want. Mevarich Aleihem, you make a bracha. However, he says, Ahasarim Shememaneha Melech B'chol Ir V'ir, what about the case of Cairo, where people who are virtually all powerful, they just have some king somewhere who could even be above them? Tov Yashar Levarech, below Shemu Malchut. Hedge our bets, make the bracha without using Hashem's name. And this is not something we've seen for the first time now. We've had this even in some of our shirim, and I assume you're generally familiar with such a concept, that we often kind of cheat when we have a bracha shaila. We can't always do that. Sometimes we don't make the bracha at all when it's a suffix. But sometimes when we can, we kind of cheat and we say, listen, you might as well make the bracha, just don't use Hashem's name, then there's really nothing to lose. Right? They don't know the difference anyway. It's like they're going to be insulted. You didn't say Shemu Malchus. You know. So that the Mishnah Berurah adds based on the Radbaz about that secondary leader. But the ultimate leader, when he would make using Hashem's name even, so that only if they have this unfettered, unrestricted power over life and death. The title is not meaningful. Dukes, princes, doesn't matter. Tsar, doesn't matter. What matters is that they have that power. Okay, so now we're ready for the modern day 20th century Western world question, which again, hopefully one day, some of you will have halacha l'maisa, you'll meet a president, you'll meet a prime minister, maybe you'll meet the queen, and maybe by then it'll be a king. So, we'll have to see. Who had a question before we go to that? Zach, you still have a question?
Jacob still had a question.
Oh, man. Anyone else?
Could there be enough to get between the Hatham Sofer and the Ultimate? They don't seem to use the same exact definition, but like the ability to kill somebody and have a fear of another king above you seems to be different.
But that is what the Orchot Chaim said.
Did he say that the ability to kill someone is the power and
the
Hatham Sofer said he has no fear of the king above him?
Okay, so the Chasam Sofer is historically reacting to or assimilating in, I guess you could say, the Radbaz. In other words, the Radbaz, when he was discriminating or distinguishing, I should say, between the definition of the Orchos Chaim and this Tsar that's running Cairo, so he mentioned that even though the guy has super duper power, but there's someone above him. Is it possible that the Orchot Chaim could have disagreed with that point and said, well, as long as he can kill you, who cares if someone could kill him? It's possible. I'm not sure if you could be Madaikin, only because I think in the medieval, you know, early medieval, you know, someone's growing up in Christian medieval Europe, I don't think they had such a concept. If you were a king who could do that, then there was no one above you. There might be a king from across the pond who wants to kill you. You might have someone who wants to have a big time Vateresh, you know, someone who wants to rebel against you, assassinate you, that you can never avoid. The only person who can avoid that is Hashem. There's no king who's too powerful to avoid a coup as a possibility. But I don't know that the fact that the Orchot Chaim didn't say it, you're right, but I don't know that means that he didn't agree with it. It's hard to know, because I don't think it was even in the realm of possibility.
Well, you could be like, be a ruler in one place, and like, the ability to kill someone, but potentially...
No, I get it. Again, and if you ask the Radbaz and then the Chasam Sofer following them, I don't think they saw it in any way different. I think they just saw it as applying to Orchot Chaim. You're asking, but he didn't mention that thing. I can't prove it. I'm not 100% convinced. My gut is that it's not a machlokas. That's the best I can do for you now. Okay? All right, so what about democratically elected leaders? Right? So, there are two people, basically there are three shitas. Just so you should know, sometimes there's two sides of the Chakira, but sometimes there are three shitas. Again, Mirz Hashem, Mehera, you'll also get your invitation to the White House. So there are actually three shitas, right? Some that say, Bracha, Shemun, Malchus, the president is the president, yay. Some that say, nothing. And some that say, this compromise of the Mishnah Berurah, Bracha without Hashem's name. Who says what and why? So I'll give you a little bit of a quick rundown. There is a Tshuva Sefer of a Rav who survived the Holocaust, lived until the 1960s, named Afarkasta D'Anya. It's a hard name, but If it helps at all, there's a professor, a well-known professor from Yerushalayim named Professor Daniel Sperber, who is has a shul in the Old City, the big professor from Bar Ilan, expert on Minhag. So this is his grandfather, last name Sperber. Was in Romania, survived the Holocaust, came to Israel. So he has this, he has a lot of Sfarim, but he's most well-known. This is a four-volume work, Afrakas Tadanya. So he, as well as some others, in fact, you know, there used to be a community from Djerba. Anyone know about the community from Djerba, off the coast of Tunisia? There was a Sephardic community there. So one of the big rabbanim of Djerba, the Shoal Unishal. So you have an interesting Romanian Djerba connection here. So they both say, they were the earliest two to say in the earlier part of the 20th century, that they think you would make a bracha with Hashem's name on a modern president. Absolutely. If they have, yeah, I mean, yeah, they're not discriminating between America. I mean, yeah, certainly the German rabbi, I don't think, is talking about America. Well, that's correct. So Rav Avadia Yosef discusses this. This is in Yechav Adat. I think I've mentioned this to you, but it's always good to remind you. Rav Avadia has two series of tshuvos. One is Yabia Omer, which he wrote as written responsa. Very long, very dense, a million kajillion sources on each page. The Yechav Adat, which I'm quoting now, were originally radio broadcast shiurim that Rav Avadia gave. I don't know if they were written up after, based on the transcripts, or he himself wrote notes, but they're also plenty scholarly and plenty brilliant, but they're a little bit easier to read, a little bit shorter, a little bit less dense than the ones he originally published as tshuvos. So in Yechav Adas, Chelek Bey, Simen Chav Ches, Rav Avadia also discusses this. And he suggests that originally, he says, come on, it's only democracy, the powers with the people. So that shouldn't be someone that gets the bracha. But in the end, Rav Avadia says he thinks, at least in what he knows about the American context, you would make a bracha. Why? Because what was the ultimate definition? The power of life and death. Well, an American president can't just go around killing American citizens. That's true. But, says Rav Avadia, listen to this. Nira. Shahol yesh biyado shal nasi medina lekabel o litchot hamlatzat chanina. Hamlatzat chanina. Someone said it before? That's the power to pardon. Since he can pardon, al mi shenidon lamut, aydei batei hamishpat hamusmakim lekach, right? Again, we have a separation of powers, our courts that decide these things. But if he has the power to pardon, nimsa shesamchut dinei nefashot mesura biyado. And then he is kimelech Shadan the Horeg Bamishvat. Very interesting. So he, Dafka, connects it to that, and therefore Rav Avadia thinks that you would make a bracha, even with Hashem's name, on a modern democratic president, if even just in the pardon power, life and death can cross his or her desk. Number one. Shita number two. This is, you'll find this in writing, in a tshuva sefer called the Moshe, Chelik Beis Simantes. We've quoted that before. That was Ramosha Stern, who was a Rav also pre-war in Eastern Europe in a city called Debrecen. So when he survived the Holocaust and came to Brooklyn, he'd be known as the Debrecen Rav. We've mentioned in the past, I think it was last week, that he had the brother who survived the Holocaust who went to Australia, who was known as, who had his tshuva sefer called the Bitzel HaChachma, not to be confused with the Batzal HaChachma, the Onion of Knowledge. I told you when I was your age, I made that mistake and embarrassed myself, so I share my own humiliation with you, so you should never have that experience. It's the Betzel, in the shadow of wisdom. So they were two brothers, pretty impressive. Chassidisha, big, big poskim, two brothers. So the one who, I don't know if he liked onions or not, but the one who lived in Brooklyn, the Debrecen, or Moshe Stern, so he has a tshuva on this, and he, his position, at least in this case, is actually similar to what I've heard. I can't remember if I ever saw it written anywhere, but I've definitely heard this consistently from the students of Rav Soloveitchik. This is Rav Soloveitchik's view. And that is that they think you should make a bracha without Hashem's name. It's a compromise. It can't be better than the Radbaz's ruler of Cairo. In fact, an American president, pardon is not the same thing as killing someone. That's saving someone. But would you make a bracha according to Rav Avadia on a governor? Governors have the power of pardon in most states in America, as far as I know. Now maybe Rav Avadia would say yes. But that, most people don't think of a governor that way, for sure not. So apparently Rav Soloveitchik, and again this is the Debrecen and others, felt that you really would only be able to make the bracha if the person really had the power to kill somebody and no one could stop him. And therefore, since an American king does not have that, American president who does not have that, for all the power and other things that an American president does have, they felt you should make the bracha, but without Shemu Malchus. The third shita, give me one second, which I want to move before it gets too late, and that is a tshuva, a position that is attributed to two people who ideologically are very far apart, but this just goes to show you that Hashkafa has to stay over here. When we're talking about halacha, we try to keep things separate. So that is Rav Aviner and Rav Sternbach. Rav Aviner, as you, I hope, know, he should live and be well, big posek from Beit El, Ataret, now they call it Ataret Yushalayim, used to be called Ataret Kohanim, in the so-called Muslim quarter in Yushalayim, big posek, Dati Lumi Rav, and then Rav Sternbach, of course, is the number two guy at the Eid Haredes, formerly of Johannesburg, and now of Harnof. But on this point, they both agree. I'm sure we can find other things they would disagree about, but on this point, they agree. And they both hold for a modern, Western, democratically elected president, nothing. No bracha with Hashem's name for sure, but not even a bracha. What's the reason? Why do they really not give credence to that position, at least so far as the bracha? So Rav Sternbach speaks about the fact, again, it's interesting that he's originally from England, then lived in Johannesburg, and now Harnof. And even though ideologically he, you know, very much sees himself in another world, not the Western world at all, but it's not surprising, aside from being brilliant, that he's exposed to Western democracies. And therefore he's the one who, in his writings, speaks about the lomdus of democracy. And he says the power is in the people. The whole idea here is that we're talking about chalak mikvodo, that somehow this person has so much power, and it reminiscent of Hashem's power. Says Sternbach, in this case it's not true. After all, ma'amado hu talui v'omei b'achlatat beit ha'nivcharim. It's all based on the ballot box. Here today, gone tomorrow. They have a koach l'hadiach oto. They can throw him out. V'samchuyotov mugbalimo. They have very limited powers. There's checks and balances. The power's in the people. So, you know, we dress them up and call him a president. But they don't have nothing compared to an ancient king, says Rav Sternbach. Rav Aviner more or less agrees with that. But he adds, first of all, he talks about the Congress, checks and balances. You know, president can be overruled. Doesn't always get what they want. Number one. Number two, against Rav Avadya, he says, come on, United States president, the Australian prime minister, Khule, they can't just kill people. Even if they have the power of pardon, it's not the same thing. And number three, also temporary. Term limits, voted out. Something we haven't spoken about yet. But if you and I, at the beginning of this year, have made a list of things that are like signature, you know, things about a monarchy, I think somebody probably would have said, you know, hereditary, one generation to the next, no term limits. So clearly a Western democratically elected leader, says Rav Aviner, is very, very different and much more limited. So they hold that you really, really shouldn't do anything. Let me just mention the modern day queen, then I'll take one or two questions, and if we still have time, I'll talk about what happens if you see a president in casual clothing, something which might have been impossible to imagine a generation ago, but now it's almost more common to see Obama casually than less casually. And again, he didn't start it. That probably started in some sense with Bill Clinton in terms of being very, very casual in public. But whatever, I'm not speaking politically at all. This is just a fact of life in 2015. And also, what if you see a president on television or you see the motorcade go by but you don't actually see him? So there are some interesting things I still want to get to with the president if we have time. But before that, let me just mention the issue of the English queen. Because an English queen is like the inverse of the United States president, right? Has the status of a king, or in this case a queen, inherited the position, will be Morish, will give it over to her children, fabulously wealthy, lives in things that we call a castle, and yet a pretty hollow position when it comes to power, certainly not putting anyone to death. So this is also discussed. The Shevet Halevi, Rav Wozner, who was a great posek, just passed away last Pesach, from Bnei Brak, originally from Lublin. So he says, listen, he thinks you do make the bracha even on the Queen of England. You do. The Shevet Halevi, Rav Shmuel Wozner. He just passed away. I mean, he was like 100 or something, but he actually just passed away. He was one of, if not the last surviving person who had been a Talmud in Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. For anyone who's either been on one of these Holocaust Jewish heritage trips, or if you're going later in the year with the yeshiva, so you go to Lublin, you see the world famous, most prestigious, famous yeshiva in Poland was Chachmei Lublin. So many of them obviously were killed in the Holocaust, but some great, great Talmud Chachamim and Poskim and Rosh Yeshivas and Gedolim survived. So one of the last remaining people who had been an active student before the Holocaust, and that yeshiva was Rav Wozner. So, in his tshuva, he says you would make the bracha on the Queen of England. Why? Even though she doesn't seem to have any real power, he says if you're medayik in the Rishonim, all the examples that they were talking about, where they talk about the power to kill, are all talking about people under a king or queen. Either someone who doesn't have that title, or someone who literally has a king or queen above them. So then the chiddush of the Rishonim was, even though you're not a king, even though you're not a queen, but because you have absolute power in this area, then we'll give you the din as if you were a king or queen. But says Rav Wozner, if you actually are, you really are a king or queen, so then that already surpasses that. You don't need any additional requirement. You know, who knows what the kings and queens could or couldn't do back in the olden days? The Gemara doesn't mention that. Why doesn't the Gemara mention that if that's so important? Says the Shevet Levi, because that's, if you deal with an absolute, a real king, a real queen, then you don't need those other things. Those are things which can prop up, if you will, a non-king or queen. You can turn a prime minister into someone to make a bracha of. You can turn a duke or a prince into someone to make a bracha of. But if you're an actual king, you're an actual queen, he thinks you should for sure make the actual bracha. Moreover, Rav Sternbach, who again, I don't know where he was actually literally born, but certainly as a child, he grew up in London before Johannesburg and then eventually Yerushalayim. So he also says you should make the bracha on the Queen of England. And he says there, he adds, he focuses on the hereditary nature of it, that it doesn't go back and forth, it stays in her hands, it stays in her children's hands, l'ol me'olamim. But he also says two other things, which are very interesting. Number one is, kvoda kikavod malachim mamish. It's not a Yiddishism, it's in the tshuva. Mamish. In other words, he says, the honor, you think about the wealth, the prestige, maybe not the power, but everything else, the trappings of power, if not actual power, the wealth, the prestige that the Queen of England and her family get, they really treat them as if they're really a queen. They don't seem to mind that she doesn't have any power. They still give her tons and tons of money and all the prestige and all the kavod. That's the second thing. And a third thing he mentions is, which I didn't know, I confirmed this with some of my friends from England a number of years ago, but he knew it, and he includes it in his tshuva, that in order for any law, even if it's voted on in Parliament in England, in order for it to become a law, it has to be stamped by the Queen. She still has that, Ariyom Hazeh. It's very symbolic. She doesn't get to veto anything. But nevertheless, the fact that she still has to do that shows that they view on some, at least symbolic level, that the power goes to her. So what ends up emerging, at least according to the majority view, I would say is, yes, bracha even with Hashem's name on the Queen of England, no bracha with Hashem's name on the President of the United States, but you certainly have nothing to lose, and many poskim do say you should make the bracha at least without Hashem's name. Just a quick confession, when I actually had my minute and a half to be alone, by which I mean alone, like with Steward Service people staring at us and all sorts of other things going on in the room, me and my wife and the President and First Lady, so even though I thought about all this, I got too nervous and I just forgot to say anything. So if it's you, like, you know, write it down in your palm or something, you know, so you won't forget. Like afterwards, I was like, I cannot believe this. Like, what a blunder. Like, I mean, I learned all the Torah. It was good l'shma. I can give a shiur on it now. but I did not make a bracha b'shita. I would have done what the Talmid Rav Soloveitchik, my Rebbeim, told me to do. But I just forgot. I got too nervous. I got flustered. Yeah.
The Pope's technical title is the King of Vatican City. So when you say this bracha on the Pope?
I have no idea. That's a good question. I don't know. It's hard to believe you'd make a bracha like that in front of the big cross and everything else that he represents, but I don't know. It's a good question. Yeah. I'll talk about it afterwards. I can't go back to that now. Okay, if you want.
Like right now.
Okay, so ask me it in a practical way.
Yeah.
Okay.
It seems like it's sort of like a divine right.
Again, the mention of Mashiach was, if you'll show honor and you'll be mishtadel to go see the non-Jewish king, you'll then be able to really discern the difference between the Jewish king.
Right, but then, like I'm saying, what's that difference? It would seem to be like there's some divinity.
Again, my impression from Rashi is he's talking about just kavod. Not that somehow Mashiach is holier. That's obvious. Mashiach is holier than the king of France.
Like, the difference between like kavod of like Mashiach and like the kavod of like...
You and I can't relate to it. I think I mentioned that. But apparently...
Like,
no, that's the point. That's exactly Rashi's point. It's exactly Rashi's
point. Like,
You can take a look at the Gemara. I gave you the Mar Malkum. It's in Brachos. Maybe I'm wrong. If you disagree with me, yeah, take a look at that. Okay, take a look at the Gemara Rashi. Okay? And we have 1 minute left. Oh, I don't see. Can I leave tag here? What?
You have 5 minutes.
Oh, 5 minutes. Excellent. Okay, we even have time for one more question. Oh, I'm going to get to that. Okay, excellent. Good segue. So two more things, okay? Two more things. Number one is how close you have to be. Or, before I get to that, do you actually have to see the king or the queen or the president? So, a few scenarios. The Gemara in Brachos Daf Nun Ches talks about a blind person. Talks about Rav Sheshes, who was blind, wanted to see the king. A whole story about a certain non-Jew who made fun of him. What are you running to do? You can't even see the king. And he says, you know, you'll see. I'll know the king is here before even you do. And sure enough, somehow he had a sense, a sixth sense, which again, it's not like superstitious. We know that blind people have heightened other senses. So apparently in the Gemara, he somehow was aware of the king's presence even before this non-Jew made the bracha. Anyway, that's just like an interesting aside. But the poskim all quote that Gemara, that you see that clearly you don't have to literally see the king. Question is, we'll see in a minute, is how far you take this. But on the question, do I have to literally see the king or not? So the post came right, it's a Beferish or Gemara. The Gemara tells the story of Sheshes. He was blind and he made the bracha. It's clear that that's, the Gemara is endorsing that, not criticizing it. So how, you know, what does that mean? Where would you draw the limit? So the post can pretty much define this. You'll find this in the Magen Avram and others, that the person had to have a sense that they were in the presence, that the king was actually there. As if I told you, you know, you can't see it, but around the corner is the king. You know, you're at the corner of some big, you know, Manhattan Street or something, you know, there's a big building. And, you know, like I told you, you know, 3 blocks away, you just go there, you'll go see the king. The king's there. So that would not count. But I know the king is there, but it doesn't matter. You have no sense of it. Maybe not the sense. You don't need the sense of sight, says the Magen Avraham and other post-Mishnah Gemara, but you do need to have a personal awareness that the king is there, even if you can't actually literally see, because... And the assumption is that if you're that close, you could also perceive the kavod of the malchus. Which again, that's the point. We want you to be able to see the kavod, because even though kavod in and of itself is not important, but the more kavod we see in this world of somebody who represents even in a lowercase mem of malchus, it can give us a greater sense of Mashiach and then ultimately the malch macha malachim. So therefore, it seems clear that a blind person would make the bracha. There are some people who say, well, maybe without Hashem's name, it's not clear in the Gemara you made Hashem's name. If that should be a halacha l'maaseh, if you know somebody who unfortunately is blind and they're going to meet the president, or forget the president, we already said not, but say the Queen of England, they said Ashka Shaila. Some people say, despite the Gemara, maybe a blind person would make the bracha without Hashem's name. Seems to me that the simple reading of the Magen Avraham is that it would be even with Hashem's name. Second stage, this really relates to your question. They talk about, let's say, I'll put it in a modern context. You're either deliberately or not, but the presidential motorcade is going by. Whether you were there looking for it, or you just happened to be there, stuck in traffic, or whatever, you see, you know for sure, right now, in America now they have all these dummy cars, right? There's the shadow, little presidential limousine, then there's the real one. One other time where I was in the presence, also of George Bush, was in the World Series in New York, the Yankees against the Diamondbacks, 3 weeks out, or whatever it was exactly, after 9/11. So the first game back in New York, game 3 of the World Series, a friend of mine got tickets and I went with them. So President Bush came to throw out the first pitch. So while you were waiting to get into the stadium, they had metal detectors, serious security to get into the Yankee Stadium that night. On two opposite sides of Yankee Stadium were Marine One helicopters landing. Now why were there two? Because one was the dummy. As they have moms, they have everything to look like right out of the, you know, right out of the movies, except for it's not. This was real life. They have a holding, so you wouldn't know which one. It's part of the security, so you don't know really where the president is. But let's say you knew which one was Marine One, or whatever the title of that helicopter is. Or you knew exactly for sure that's in that limousine, this entourage, that's where the... So in the case in Shulchan Aruch that they discuss is, let's say you're on the shore, you're in the city, and some boat going by, a big armada, and they say, you see, that's the king's boat. Probably had a special flag or something. So you can't see the king, but you know in that boat going by, the king is in there. Would you make the bracha or not? So this is also discussed. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Shari Tshuva, other poskim say, yes, you would. Because you see from the Gemara, it's not about seeing per se, it's about sensing the prestige, seeing the pageantry. And if you can do that through the presidential motorcade or the Marine One or whatever else you see, you can make a bracha even on that. Last but not least, something very interesting, which is, should it matter? I have to say, when I first saw this discussion, I was very surprised it was even a Shiloh, but it is apparently. Should it matter in what context you meet the president? or the prime minister, or the king, or the queen. Let's say, you know, even nowadays, again, the Queen of England doesn't sit there like in a robe with the crown always, but, you know, she, on some level, you know, for whatever, in her context, you know, she dresses formally. When she goes out and you're meeting her as the queen, trust me, she looks that way. She's got the gloves on, the whole, you know, $2,000 dress or whatever, maybe $10,000 dress, whatever it costs, you know. But let's say, you know, you happen to just be, you know, a family friend, or somehow you knew somebody, you know, one of the cleaning ladies or something, you know, was your friend, and you're there, and, you know, you see the queen, you know, come down in the morning, you know, in her PJs or something. Would you make the bracha on that? Or again, you're in the Central Park, and the president comes jogging by. Maybe with, now with 100 security guards and the whole deal, but he's in shorts and a t-shirt, right? Obama's trying to play golf, missing another shot in the basketball court. Right? I would think the president's the president, the queen's the queen. So there's a discussion if you see them in a more intimate, casual way, without the whole retinue, without the whole pageantry that comes along with it. So there, the same Betzel HaChachma, the brother of the Nebuchadnezzar, the one from Australia, so he says that he thinks it may be necessary that... I'm sorry. Rav Avadi Yosef has a chiddush, even though he himself was one of the quote-unquote mekilim. He said he didn't make the bracha with Hashem's name on a president of the United States. He says only if they're in their presidential presentation, in their formal wear, with all of the pageantry. If it's a very casual way, then you would not. On the other hand, there are reports that when the king of Jordan once came to Israel, pre-state, Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld was the leader of the old yeshuv, or what we would now call Haredes, was called the old yeshuv then. He apparently met with the king of Jordan in private, even though there was no one else around, and the report is that he made the bracha. So, even though it's an interesting shaila, apparently you'd make the bracha anyway. Last but not least is the issue of TV. That's what I meant to say from the Deborah. What if you see the president on TV? You know, we see them all the time, so it's hard to believe that you'd make the bracha, and the answer is you don't. But it is discussed. It is discussed in a number of tshuvos. If you're seeing the president on TV or the king or the queen on TV, should it matter or not? Most poskim say you would not make the bracha. Because again, it's not about the visual sight. It's about sensing in a real tangible way the awesomeness of it, which you presumably don't get sitting on your couch or wherever you are that you're seeing this thing in the TV. There's a story about years ago that when the current Queen of England, I think she was inaugurated in 1950, so I'm gonna Google that to be sure. But there's a story that in one of the yeshivas, I think it might have been Tells, that the Rosh Yeshivas brought a TV in for all the boys to be able to see her inauguration so they can make a bracha, because these things don't happen every now and then. You know, these, you know, every day. So if that story is true, I don't know if it's corroborated, so apparently they thought you would make the bracha even on the TV. But it seems to be very, very difficult. It seems to me you really have to be in their presence, maybe not seeing exactly, maybe you see the motorcade, something like that, I buy. But to be so far away, not even the same place, a TV, seems to be very, very unlikely. Okay, I think Rabbi Liebtag is waiting to come in, so let's take 1 minute of questions, then we'll have to call it a night. Yes?
Yeah, I was just wondering,